Blog Talk Radio.
It isn't very hard, and I pray that you do. The world needs peace, and peace starts with you. Calling out to all the people underneath the sun. Man or woman, if you're old, if you're young. No matter what you do, or the nation of your birth. Join me in this prayer for peace on earth.
Yes, come join us. Blessed is peace on earth. Blessed and greetings. Greetings and blessings. Shalom. Peace. Bracha. Upon the entire human family condition. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert with a higher inner frequency. We're called Soul Class. This is Soul Class number 775, Anusim on the Rise, part 39, Sweeter Than Wine. With Creator's help, our next program is taking place right now on June 19th, 2022, starting at 6 p.m. Holy Land, Jerusalem time, corresponding to 11 a.m., live from Turtle Island equals a.k.a. the USA Unified Soul Actualization. Our program content will focus on being a discussion with Ezra Lanusim Israeli Amuta, CEO, Yafa Batikasta. We'll share her thoughts about a soul awakening documentary, Children of the Inquisition. Yafa Batia will share her vision why this documentary needs to be broadcast all over the planet. And if time suffices during the broadcast, she plans to discuss the book she's writing, which will also address this issue, which is coming to the forefront of human conversations. I wrote conversions in the poem, but it's really conversations. Some conversions might ensue as well. Namely, different peoples being interested in tracing back their true ancestry, instead of buying into the modern dystopia being promoted by modern false claim prophets and those who want to make eugenics a normal fabric of 21st century world culture. To further interact with Yafa Batia DaCosta, you can reach her via Yaf, Y-A-F-F-B-A-T-Y-A at yahoo.com. To participate, to make the show slightly more organic, the call-in number is 563-999-3688. And also I'll be discussing a link where you can see a trailer to this documentary, Children of the Inquisition, which to me is like light shining through the darkness of the last moments of exile. We're just going to turn down the music. This is by Peace, which is written and performed by Ariel Lesser. Whenever I hear Mr. Lesser, I always get more. Let's turn down the music and get right to the shoe. Good afternoon, Yafa Batia. Yafa Batia. Yafa Batia.
Going with you. We're
going to
have a great shoe today. I love that word, shoe.
Remembrance of the late, great Ed Sullivan. So,
right, exactly.
Everybody, I'd like to share an experience. Last week I did an interview with Winston Butler of the St. Andrews area in Jamaica, talking about the Taino people, who are basically individuals and groups and cultures with various like tribal affiliations, although they don't call themselves tribal, but the way I've seen professors talk about this, there is some sort of tribal linkage between all of them. And I heard a tribal elder talk about the word, the Taino word for headache, which he called chola, C-H-O-L-A, if you were to spell it phonetically in English. I said, wait a minute. In Hebrew, when you take a C-H and you, it sounds like a cha, it sounds like chola, which sounds like someone who's not feeling well or sick. I said, wait a minute. These things, these connections are getting more apparent, as well as I mentioned last week's show, and I guess I'll continue to talk about this, is that over 30 years ago, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, may his merits protect us, talked about how there was a boat that was found in South America with ancient Hebrew script on it, and the Rebbe chuckled saying, I don't think the Vikings brought that boat from Europe to teach the people living over in South America Hebrew.
Right.
So that being said, I'd like to start off with a little bit of Rambam, because he's our great eagle, our Nesher Godol, in guiding us through these times from the past and the past 800 years. And then we'll turn to you to take the microphone and take us to where we have to go in today's presentation. So this is chapter 7 in the Laws of the Foundation of the Torah, talking about prophecy. It is one of the foundations of our faith that God communicates by prophecy with man, which means woman might as well, as we'll see in a moment. Prophecy is bestowed only upon a very wise sage of a strong character who is never overcome by his natural inclinations in any regard. Instead, with his mind, he overcomes his natural inclinations at all times. He must also possess a broad and correct perspective. Now, commenting on the beginning of this law, that in Egeret Teman, the letter written to the Yemenite Jews of his time, Rambam said that or imply that prophecy can be granted to all men, Gentiles, or Bnei Noach, as well as Jews. And I think this is where we're heading, before we get into the meat of the program, is that there is a spirit which is arising, because a lot of people around the world of all different cultures, all different backgrounds, all different religions, all different levels of economic status, are kind of fed up with a dystopian viewpoint that certain groups or individuals or organizations are trying to shove down our throat, and rather they want to go back through something, they want to look inside themselves, commune with God, commune with their neighbors, commune with people, other cultures, to realize it ain't necessarily so, which was a song written way back, where it was denying the truth of the Bible. So now we're saying about all these dystopian viewpoints being kind of forced down our cognitive processing experiences, it ain't necessarily so. Could you please comment on this?
Oh, yeah, and they do it with force. And force, F-O-R-C-E, in other words, they compel people, okay, to do something that they wouldn't naturally do and don't necessarily want to do at that time, like compel them to change their religious beliefs, for example, which was what was done in Spain and Portugal to the Jews there 500 plus years ago, and then they were persecuted in the Inquisition. So, I mean, that's my segue, okay, into this film documentary. So it's the elite, the arrogance of the elite that thinks they know better for people and can decide better for human beings about various aspects of their life than the human being can decide. And what they actually do is they take away the free will that God gave every single human being.
That's right.
And if it comes from God, which it did, okay, of course, our free will, who is any other human being to take away the free will of another human being? Now, there are exceptions, of course. Someone who's broken the law, who's done something that's against a particular statute in law, and the punishment says, you know, they need to be incarcerated for a certain amount of time, or even, God forbid, they need to lose their life because they took a life. Okay, but that's the exception. With the exception of that, someone who's broken the law, okay, everyone should have, especially around matters of religion, or if you want to call it philosophy, if you want to call it, you know, different traditions that they may have or that their ancestors had, but it was taken away from them by force, which happened to the unseen, the Spanish and Portuguese. So there's this wonderful, wonderful film documentary. It's 2 hours long, but it's well worth the time. And it's called The Children of the Inquisition. So it not only talks about this history of what happened to our ancestors, mine included, by the way. My ancestors were Portuguese Jews who had to flee. Okay, they went to the Azores, and then from the Azores, later on in the ancestry, they went to New Bedford, Massachusetts, and settled in the United States, Northeast. And these people also fled to Brazil, the Portuguese. And, of course, the Spanish went to all over places in what's called Latin America today, but they went all over the world, too. We have Portuguese in Goa, West India. We have Portuguese descendants of the Portuguese forced converts in Indonesia. We're working with these people, okay? We have descendants of Spanish and Portuguese in Australia, New Zealand, Philippines. Okay, so all these Western Pacific region, I call it, and then, of course, North Africa, Middle East, all of Europe, these people, the descendants of the forced converts, children of the Inquisition, live today in countries that span two-thirds of the globe, Don.
Wow.
And we work with a lot of these people. So I hope you've had a chance, I don't know if you had the time, to put the trailer on your site, on your Facebook page, or on your, you know, your radio show site, but it's not very long. It's only a few minutes, okay? But as far as the two-hour documentary is concerned, we hosted a screening of that documentary in Houston, Texas, in February. It was a pilot, okay? We knew it was a pilot going in. It was first time. So we learned a lot. You always do learn a lot from the first time.
Right.
So we made quite a few changes because of the lessons that we learned. But the next time we're going to screen it will be also in Texas, in San Antonio, July 31. So we have the date confirmed, but we're still working on the venue, where it's going to be. And it will be a combination of live. There'll be people in a location, okay, viewing the film live. And then we'll also have people who can watch it over the Internet by live streaming. We're going to sell tickets. Okay, it's not going to cost a lot of money. We want people to see this film. Okay, so we're not going to ask for a lot of money, but we are going to ask for a minimal amount of money, and this will be a fundraiser for us. First of all, we have to pay for the film. It costs $1,000 to screen the film, okay?
Right.
But it's available for 2 days. That link on the Internet is available for 2 days, so we'll sell tickets. We'll make some money. We'll be able to pay, you know, the producers of the film the rental fee. It's also going to be big time in Italy. There are a lot of plans in Italy. We also recently acquired the film with Italian subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we had to work with the production film for the Italian subtitles. It already has Spanish and Portuguese subtitles because
mm-hmm.
the film is in English. So we can bring it to all of Latin America. We can bring it to Brazil, of course, and Portugal and Spain. We're going to bring it to France. We'll have to actually earn some money and, you know, get some of the fundraising money to have French subtitles done for the film.
Right.
Okay, we're going to take it everywhere, absolutely everywhere. So, but it'll take time, and we have to have a local team working with us, okay, that will choose and arrange for the local venue where it's shown locally with people sitting in an auditorium, sitting in a theater, or wherever, okay? And then people will also be able to watch it live streaming, so we're hoping to do both.
Beautiful. And let me ask you this. What were the factors that caused the initial screening to be in Texas as, say, like a more densely populated area, like, say, like New York City, where I'm sure you have a lot of Anusim, and, say, like L.A. As well? What were the factors? Just strictly economic, or there was just more receptive down south as opposed to, like, on the east or west coast?
Well, the gate, if you want to call it that, the thing that we absolutely need is a local team. Okay, we need local people to make the arrangements. What they did was they called the Houston Holocaust Museum, made arrangements for them to sponsor the film and have it at that location. They then worked with local restaurants and any kind of business that wanted to sponsor it, okay, partially, and donate to pay for the film. So part of it is paying for the film and having local sponsors for that, and part of it is having an entity, an organization or whatever, that has a place where we can screen the film and the equipment to screen it, big screen, you know, whatever. So those are the two gates. So that's the first place where we had that, both of those combined, was in the Houston Holocaust Museum. We want to take it to all the Holocaust museums, and I'll tell you why. The Holocaust Museums do a fabulous, fabulous job in talking about the Shoah, but they don't draw the connection to what happened in the Inquisition, and there is a connection between those two events, even though there was some 500 years between them. The Nazis had sent someone, I don't want to say Goebbels, because it's off the top of my head, and I'm not sure, but they had sent someone to Spain to look at Inquisition records, imagine this, to see exactly what the Spanish people did about the so-called Jewish problem, okay, or their solution, because the Nazis called what they did the Jewish solution, okay,
right.
And they wanted to see what the Spanish had done during the Inquisition, and they did some of those same things, like the requirement that people wear some identifying symbol outside on their clothing,
right,
which happened in the Nazis case to be the Magen David, the yellow star, okay? Jews in Spain had to wear distinctive clothing to call them out as Jews, okay? So there are other parallels like that. So there ought to be, we think, in these Holocaust museums, an exhibit talking about the Inquisition and the connections between the Holocaust, okay, and the Inquisition. That's what we're going to be working towards also in promoting this film. We want to take it to every single Holocaust museum around the world, okay?
I hear you. I'm sure you're aware in New York City there is a Holocaust museum. And of course,
yes.
It would be the creme de la creme accomplishment in this dispersion of this vital information to get it to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C.
All of those things have been discussed. We have a fellow in New York who's busy right now with some things that are going on, you know, for him. But once that has been set aside or it's finished, you know, whatever, he is planning to, I think he's got on his mind, there's a Sephardi community in New York he wants to take it to. There's a museum or something, some venue in Miami. His family is in Miami, so he wants to take it to Miami, mm-hmm. and there'll be a local team there, of course, that he'll put together. And, of course, Washington, D.C. is on the books as being something that we want to take. So I have a list of all the places that we want to take it and potential people either in our organization or not in our organization. It could be people who don't have anything to do with Ezra and Asim, but who want to work with us to bring the film to their locale. Okay, we'll work with people like that. So we want to take it all over the world. But we need a local team so they can do those two things. They can look for sponsors, people who want to sponsor the film. It's so educational because it does two things. It talks about the history of what happened in Spain and Portugal during the Inquisition, but the Inquisition lasted even longer in the New World, 330 years. In the New World, in Mexico, and in the Caribbean, and in Brazil, and Peru, okay, in these different places. So what we wanted to do, so what the film does is it talks about the history of what happened in Spain and Portugal, but it talks about the modern-day movement, we call it a movement, of the B'nai Nassim, the people who are descended from those forced converts who lost their religious freedom to this bizarre notion from the Roman Catholic Church of the time that they were heretics. They, first of all, forcibly converted them. And then second of all, if they were observing Jewish law and custom privately, secretly, and were found out, okay, then they were persecuted for it. And ultimately some were killed for it.
Right.
Okay? So, okay, but that's what happened 500 and whatever years ago. But now we've got the situation today of people, myself included, who are descended from these secret Jews. They're also called crypto-Jews, or we call them in Hebrew, B'nai Nassim, who are descended from those forced converts who want to make a comeback. We get very little help. We get very little support in helping them. It's really paltry what we get. Well, it's mainly because most people don't even know about the movement, don't even know what's going on for these people and how they're struggling and trying so hard to come back and getting so little support across the board. Okay, we know why, and that's what my book is going to be about also, by the way, why we're having such difficulty and why we're having such trouble.
Sure. I just want to mention, God willing, if the movie, the documentary Children of Inquisition, can make it to the New York City, I think it's at the New York City Heritage Museum, which a primary part of it is, in fact, I think they dedicate a whole floor towards the Holocaust. If that can be brought there, I would like to participate to give some media coverage, interview people before or after, and we can make it part of a future show, whether it be with you or that, you know, just to get like bits and pieces of people sharing their views, like what is their perception before seeing the documentary and what are their perceptions after the documentary. I do know this, Yaffa Bati, that from what I've learned in Torah, from a psychological standpoint, if a person doesn't feel balanced, and we're not talking about, you know, from the perspective of lack of proper overall mental health, wellness, or even cognitive, but some person feels like there's an itch on their spinal cord, or there's something bugging them in their mind, or something doesn't sit well in their heart, it's because they're not as balanced as they can be with the Almighty. And part of that imbalance is not knowing one's history, not knowing one's culture, not one's adherence to the principles of Torah and mitzvot, whether they be of the children of Israel or the children of Noah. And what I've seen lately, Yaffa Bati, is our listening audience, believe it or not, We're getting more people from Russia listening in, and Jamaica, and Vietnam, and the Philippines. Of course, we have South America and Mexico. It's not just a nuanced thing about the Jewish a movement within the Jewish people of the Nusim. Is people all around the world are saying, where did I come from? Because the modern presentation of who we're coming from doesn't seem to satiate the human psyche or the human emotions or the human soul, and therefore that's why this is like the tip of the spear, as I like to call it, in terms of reawakening human beings to their purpose of being faithful stewards on the face of this earth. Your comment on these matters.
Well, you hit a particular nerve with all of that. And from what I can see from my seat in the bleachers here in this world, is there was a lot of trauma, enormous trauma created in the world.
Yes.
In the early second century, when the so-called church fathers, okay, of the Roman Catholic Church, remember, Catholic means universal.
Uh-huh.
So it was the Roman Universal Church, which became ensconced in the Roman Empire in the early 4th century, but even in the early 2nd century, these writers were former pagans, or they were even pagan at the time, okay, and they took the writings of the 1st century, okay, and twisted and distorted the meanings of about half a dozen key concepts in Judaism, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For example, the fact that a Jewish Messiah would be God in human form. Nowhere is that anywhere in Judaism.
Nope.
Nowhere.
Nope.
Okay? The concept of salvation and what that means, the concept of atonement for sin and what that means, or I should say, what it meant in the first century, when the first century writers used those terms and those concepts, and what it later came to mean with the so-called church fathers changing the definition of what these things meant. Okay? And furthermore, they forced that version of what they called Christianity onto all the pagans of the empire.
Right.
In the 300s and the 400s, it was forced. Okay? And there were arguments for a couple of hundred years about this understanding and that understanding, and they finally locked on to what they wanted all this stuff to mean from the perception, from the perspective of the Roman imperial cult. That's what it was called in that day. The Roman emperor and the cult around the Roman emperor ultimately determined, they were the elite back then, and they forced their definitions in these areas, these half a dozen major conceptual areas, they forced their definition on all the people, created a version of Christianity that did not exist in the first century, except in those places where Paul went out to Asia Minor, starting at Antioch. They were first, the Gentiles, the non-Jews, were first called Christians at Antioch. So what I'm doing in my book, Dawn, is I'm explaining the difference between Antioch Christianity, which was a version of Judaism for non-Jews, which we call today B'nai Noach,
right,
and what Paul was doing in that time, from about 50 of the Common Era until he was killed in Rome, okay, what he was doing was teaching the Noahide laws. It was a Noahide movement. But, of course, the Romans didn't want that. That would be competition,
right,
for their Roman imperial cult. And I want to explain one other thing, and I hope your audience and you yourself, Don, are sitting down for this one, because it's a shocker for a lot of people.
Okay.
The early Christian martyrs, so-called, the people who in the first century were fed to the lions by the Romans, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They were not fed to the lions because they believed in some guy from the Galilee that he was a Jewish Messiah.
Okay.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
They were killed because they refused to burn incense to an image of the emperor because they'd been taught to worship one God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And because they refused to worship the emperor, that's why they were fed to the lions.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
Most people don't.
And I am
most
sitting down,
don't.
So I'm not going to fall off my chair, I promise.
Now, we have, and I'm going to talk about it in my book, we have a document from that period of time. It's called Diary of Portia, P-O-R-T-I-A, Portia, a young woman, okay, who was writing a diary. She was in prison for her beliefs and for her faith. And she and her father tried to convince her, just do whatever they tell you to do. Don't lose your life over this, you know. And it's all in her diary. And it's very, very clear. And, of course, somebody in the prison who eventually apparently got out of prison and with the diary, okay, and it's published. It's out there for people to read it on their own. And she wrote in her diary she was not going to give up her faith. Okay, and the faith she's talking about is the faith in the Creator, the one God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Wow.
It's called the Diary of Portia.
Wow. Wow. It is so important, this dialogue you have to buy people to hear, and the idea that, you know, and even the burning of the emperor wanted people to burn incense in, reminds me of the story with Nebuchadnezzar, after he'd already destroyed the first temple in Jerusalem. And he had constructed a totem pole that the Jews would have bowed down to, which they did. But he used a lot of subterfuge. What he did was, because they had taken royal members of the house of Judah to educate them and to learn from them, is that they actually put one of the names of the Almighty, I think the ineffable four-letter name, and when the Jews looked at the totem pole, it said, "I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt." So they bowed down to it. It was just the three young men who courageously stood up to that and did not bow down, that we have the miracle that we know today is, you know, and several thousand years later, we have Saddam Hussein, who had a totem pole built in Iraq before the first Iraqi war, Gulf War, and he said, "I wanted to finish off the work of my ancestor Nebuchadnezzar," because he felt he was a reincarnation of him. So there's really nothing new under the sun, Yafet Bhatti, in terms of trying to coerce people to dystopian viewpoints of how to serve God by intermixing with Hashem have mercy upon us, all different forms, insidious and overtly displays of idolatry.
Right. And all of this is done by force. Now, what happened in the ancient world, okay, is the Romans had a culture of using force with their subjects, whether it be the people in the Roman Empire who were already there or in territories that they captured and took over and occupied, like Judea in the first century. Okay, they were occupiers from the latter part of before the Common Era into the Common Era. And so they were always into this thing about forcing people and using force. Now, they did this in quite a few different ways, and I talk about this in the book as well. They had a magistrate in the Roman organization called a censor. Now, the censor's job was to count the people. We still do this today. Countries take a census.
Right.
Of their citizens, okay? So the person doing that in ancient times was called a censor, okay? He was a magistrate that had that title. So he was to count the people, and he was to assess their property, how much property that they owned, so that he could levy tax against the property, okay? Which obviously goes on still to this day. Okay, fine. But he also had a third function, and that was called censorship. We call it to this day, censorship.
Wow.
If he did not like something that was out in print in these manuscripts that were moved around from hand to hand, copied, whatever, if he didn't like something or somebody brought something to him, you know, to read, and he didn't like it, they would destroy it. They would prevent that particular thing from being distributed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, he did that, and the corollary to that is called, to this day, propaganda. He would write things opposite that. He would write things that were in favor of the empire. So if he thought there was something in writing that was unfavorable to the empire, okay, to the Roman imperial cult, he would destroy it, prevent it from being distributed, and on the other hand, he was responsible for ensuring that there were things out there that were written that were favorable to the empire, okay?
Right, right, right.
Now, Pontius Pilate is written up in Josephus, okay, as a horrible, very violent procurator in Judea, so bad that they had to recall him to Rome.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So bad. But what do they have written about him in the first century writings? He believed that the guy in front of him was innocent. He takes some water. He washes his hands and says, you know, I'm washing my hands of his blood. And it's written in these documents, you know, and the people were screaming for his blood. The Jews are screaming for his blood, and that's why he got crucified. So in those documents, they blame the Jews, not Rome. Well, what does that sound like to you?
Wow. It sounds too modern to me.
Do you think they're going to actually blame Rome in those documents in the first century?
Right.
Especially after 70 of the Common Era, after the temple had been destroyed by the Romans. So people, most people, and again, the full majority, both Jew and non-Jew alike, don't understand all of this stuff and how powerful the Roman imperial cult was in that day, and they occupied Judea, and all the stuff that was going on that related to the Romans and the centurions and all this stuff, and this whole backdrop of forcing onto people what they wanted things to be like, and of course later they forced all the pagans to adopt this religion that they called Christianity, but it no longer had such connection to Judaism like it did in the first century. It's phenomenal how many people don't know about all of this. Absolutely blows me away.
Yes, but I do have our old-time friend who has co-hosted many programs myself, aside from our efforts, Dennis Ryan, who is a student and teaching seminar teachings around them. I'd like to bring him on because I'm sure he'll have some questions or comments. I'd like to bring him on, okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Next, I'm bringing him in. Dennis? 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 Okay, I tried to call Dennis before the program. He's not responding. Okay, so we're going to leave the mic open for him, Yaffe Batya. If he'll,
okay.
Maybe he stepped away. He had to take care of something. So anyway, let's get back to our conversation. So how long did it take to produce Children of the Inquisition, to your knowledge, and how many people are actually involved in the actual making, the physical making of the film?
Okay, well, the main person involved with its production, Joseph Levitt, told me that it took 20 years.
Wow.
So it took a lot of research about the Inquisition itself, of course, that period of time. And again, it lasted for a few hundred years. Okay,
right.
And then they interviewed quite a few people, modern day people, who are involved with the Benedictine movement. They interviewed Rabbi Stephen Leon in El Paso, Texas. They interviewed Judy Milgram. I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
No.
She wrote a book called My 15 Grandmothers or My 17, I forget, 15 or 17 Grandmothers. She went all the way back in her female line, unbroken female line from her mother, of course, all the way back to a woman who was torched in the Portuguese Inquisition.
Okay.
Obviously a Jewish woman.
Right.
Okay, so every descendant of her, who's a female, carried on that those people are all Jewish, and they had to hide, and there was a woman who was interviewed whose last name is Carvajal, and Carvajal is a very famous Spanish name, Spanish-Portuguese name, from a man who was the governor in New Mexico, Mexico, of an area called Nuevo de Leon, okay? He actually has elements of both Portuguese and Spanish in him because he was born in Portugal, but he was raised in Spain.
Right.
Okay, so I'm sure maybe he spoke both languages. And he became a governor, but he was also persecuted because his sister and her sister's children were secretly Jewish. They were torched. They were burnt at the stake, whereas he was put into jail. He was accused and convicted of the crime of not telling the authorities about his own sister and her children, that they were secretly Jewish. In other words, he didn't tell on them.
Right.
So he was accused of that, and they were going to exile him for a certain number of years, and then he died in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that was Carvajal. And then Carvajal Hermoso, I think is the name of his nephew, became even more famous than the uncle named Carvajal. Okay, so it's a very famous family of crypto Jews, secret Jews, okay, because these people had to hide.
Right.
They couldn't live openly as Jews or they'd be killed.
Right.
Okay, so this whole story, a lot of people actually, they hear the word Inquisition, they go, oh yeah, that was in Spain, and people were, you know, whatever, and persecuted and whatnot. A lot of people don't know that it went over to Portugal later, that both Portuguese and Spanish people were persecuted in the New World. Okay, the countries of Latin America today and the Caribbean, they don't know that that persecution of the Inquisition followed people to the New World, and people were tortured at the stake in Mexico City and other places, like I mentioned before, the Caribbean and Brazil and Peru and all of this. For over 300 years, most people don't even know that.
Right.
And then people continued to hide, even after 1820, when the torching at the stake stopped, okay? People don't even know that, that people continued to be afraid to come out publicly and openly. This is why this phenomena of people coming out today to be publicly Jewish from an ancestry of the forced converts, because in some cases, everybody in the family does it. Three generations sometimes.
Right.
Everybody wants to come back. In other families, only one person, or maybe two. In my family, I'm the only one who came back.
Right.
So all my cousins on my mother's side, all my relatives on my mother's side, of course, know me and know I live in Israel and I'm married to a rabbi and blah, 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 and I came back and all of this. They all know it.
Right.
But nobody else has done it.
Hmm.
Okay? So in a lot of cases, there's that going on. One of the reasons, by the way, Dawn, that I'm writing this book is so that people, either from the B'nai Noach history or people from the B'nai Nusim history, have something that they can send to their network, whether it be family or friends or whatever, to explain to them either why they came out of Christianity or why they never was in Christianity or whatever the case may be, so that all the people in their network have an opportunity to better understand that person, okay, and why they're so staunchly now connected to Hashem, connected to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and whatever. So they have it. They can refer people to this book once it's done, and they'll go, oh, okay, now I understand, you know. Because otherwise it could create, and you don't want to have arguments with family, and you don't want to have that feeling and that blood, you know. But this is an education for people that really needs to happen. I've been told by several people, I wrote an article, by the way, that's a summary of the book. I mean, it's a very, very high-level, I don't know, 800-word article that I wrote that's going to get published pretty soon on a website. And but I sent it out to a few people just to get, you know, some initial feedback from some people. And what they told me was, yeah, I know all that, but I didn't understand this or I never heard that. And, oh, by the way, this story has to be told. It has to come. come out for people to be able to talk about it and understand it so they can understand the people who are coming out of this forced business, okay, this culture. I call it cancel culture.
Right.
Okay. They'll cancel you,
right,
including death, right?
Right.
So it has to be talked about because it's going on today. And it may not be in the religious sphere. There may no longer be forced conversions of people in terms of religious belief. But there's other forced things going on today.
Right.
Of all kinds of other stuff. So cancel culture comes from Roman culture of using force to convince people to be a certain way or believe a certain thing or behave a certain way by force.
Right.
Not by allowing them to have free will. Okay? So let me tell you the name of the book, by the way. I keep forgetting to tell you the title.
Right.
The work title, and I think I'm going to keep it, or at least I hope I'm going to keep it. It's called The War Against the Secret Jews, colon, subtitle,
right,
Cancel Culture from Ancient to Modern Times.
Wow. Wow. Yes, Sabatia, I think we brought in Dennis Ryan, so I'm sure he'll have questions, comments, concerns about all these matters. Dennis, are you on?
Hello, Don.
Wow. Hi.
Have you
heard Yaffe Batya's presentation so far?
Previous and Mangia. Yes, I have been listening.
Okay. Dennis, I want to say before you go further, your voice is very muted. Can you speak more directly into the microphone? Because if I can't hear you so well, then for sure Yaffe Batya and the rest of our listening audience cannot hear you. Try to speak directly and elevate your voice, please.
Hello.
Yes, sounds better.
Yes, what happens is the 300 years of the Inquisition was terrible. It was atrocious. The things that were done were inhuman all along the way. Unfortunately, humans have a habit of repeating their history. We don't learn from history. We should. We should understand that and that understanding of what she's talking about is we're missing that. And we need that because it affects our mind and our heart. But humans are imperfect and they keep on going. They plow forward thinking that everything their ancestors did, there was nothing really wrong. They were misunderstood. Well, if you keep going about that, you're going to keep repeating all the atrocities all over again.
Huh. Did you hear Dennis?
No, the volume is way
yeah,
too low.
Dennis, we it's hi. Is there any way you can project your voice more, Dennis?
I'm gonna get off this phone. I'll call you on another phone.
Okay. So
okay.
Basically, yeah. Call back, please, on another line. Thank you. So basically, what he was saying, the gist of it, Yaffe Batya, is that you know human beings have not learned from their mistakes, but you know, I mean, that is the old, you know, it to me that's akin to the whole idea of, well, the devil made me do it. But I would go back and ask the question, well, who told you to connect to the devil to make you do it? You know what I mean? So, okay, we're going to wait. We have about 18 minutes more. Did you get feedback from that initial screening in Texas or heard, you know, hearsay from those who were there present, you know, how people were reacting to the initial screening of Children of the Inquisition?
Well, yeah, they loved it. But, you see, the people who had been invited, okay, predominantly were from a particular Orthodox Jewish community, okay? So whether they had known some of this before or didn't know, and maybe some parts they did know and some parts they didn't, they were definitely intrigued and interested in watching a documentary that combined both the history of the B'nai Nassim, you know, from the Inquisition, and talking about the current movement of the B'nai Nassim, which some people, again, knew about, some people didn't. So when we take it to a public audience of Jews and non-Jews alike, there could be Christians there, there could be Buddhists, Hindu, whatever, you know, people who are atheists, doesn't matter. It's an educational event that anybody can attend and learn some really important things about the fact that historically we've had this thing for like 2,000 years now, a little more than 2,000 years, because
right.
the Roman imperial cult, of forcing people. Okay? It's a cultural dimension, okay, that there are people who consider themselves to be elite in some manner, shape, or form, whether they have the title of emperor or whatever, but they consider themselves elitist. They're elite. They're, you know, they're not a part of what are called the basic human being who are worthless eaters, who don't mean anything. You know, maybe they produce food because they're farmers, but they're dumb, stupid, and lazy, and, you know, there's nothing really there, okay?
Right.
And these elite people can dictate to these other people about their life.
Right.
Or different aspects of their life. So there are a lot of people that don't even realize that this goes back to the Roman imperial cult, to that period of history,
right.
and it's been existing for the whole 2,000 years.
And I might like to add is that we have Israel and the world, for that matter, have experienced four exiles: the Egyptian one, the Babylonian, the Persian Media one, and now the Roman one, which has lasted the longest. Dennis, we have Dennis back online. Dennis, can you try to project your voice as much as possible so we can hear you?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear him, Yafi Bhatia?
There's static and not as good as usual.
Okay. Dennis, we have a problem. I think I know the solution, but I'm not going to discuss it on the air.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, but Yafi Bhatia, who's on another line, has to be able to hear you. Speak out, Dennis. Let's see if she can hear you.
Humans have not learned from their history. And their history is full of mistakes, errors, because we're imperfect. And all the sins of the world is in our history. But we haven't learned anything.
Yafi Bhatia, can you hear that?
No, sorry.
Okay, Dennis, I apologize to you, sir. Either I'm going to have to get another phone, we'll have to find another means. So I'm just going to put you on hold, because if she can't hear you, there can't be any, like, interaction between you and her. I can hear you both, but, you know, for me just to repeat what you said.
Well, can't you just very briefly repeat what he said, and I'll address it?
Well, I mean, I was so – Dennis, you want to repeat to me, and then I'll recapitulate it to Yafi Bhatia.
Humans have never learned or understood their history. Yet,
humans have never learned to understand their human history. Take it in small bites, Dennis, so I can share it with Yafi Bhatia. Go ahead. They have learned nothing. Something, but not enough, I would say. Okay, what else?
Well, take the atrocities or the sins of our ancestors. We don't feel responsible for our sins of our ancestors.
So what Dennis is saying is that if we look at the atrocities and sins of our ancestors, our present generation doesn't feel any connection to them, so therefore feel scot-free, I would say. I'm adding
no
words.
Impervious. We're impervious to the lessons of history.
We are impervious to the lessons of history. Your take on this, Yafi Bhatia?
Well, you know, there's the old expression, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. I think it goes something along those lines, right?
Right.
But in this particular case of what I'm talking about, I think it's a little bit different from people refusing to learn from history. It's more along the lines of people who don't even know this history. It's not taught in the schools, at least not in the United States, not that I know of, okay? It's not taught here in Israel, in the schools, as far as I'm concerned. And so the reason why we're so, you know, up for showing this documentary is so that people can learn about this history. Now, once they learn this history and about this movement to help the people who are descended from the forced converts, you know, of the Inquisition time, but of course there were people who were forcibly converted during the Roman era as well. But once they learn about this history, now they have the opportunity to do something about it. And that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Right.
Because after that, they don't do anything about it. And that's between them and God. But, yeah, he's absolutely right. We often don't learn from history and don't do something different. And, of course, you know, you have the famous quote from Einstein, which says, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, you know, and expect different results, that's the definition of insanity.
True. Dennis, any comments that I can share with Yaffe Batya?
We can do better, and we should, but we must answer to God. God will shine a light on things, and if you're open, you will receive the light.
Okay, let me try to remember all that. We can do better and should do better, but we must turn to God who will shine the light on these issues. Yaffe Batya, I have a question. Why was one of the primary forms of torture and murder during the Spanish Inquisition fire? Was it a theological basis why human beings should be burned in fire?
Yes. The reason why they were burned in fire was because somebody, apparently some cleric, had quoted something from the Bible. I think they were quoting somewhere from the Hebrew Bible that mankind was not allowed to spill blood. Obviously, that means killing another human being.
Right.
So they quoted that and said, well, we can't spill blood, so let's burn them alive.
Let's boil the blood.
Done.
Let's burn them.
Heaven forbid,
now,
yeah.
If they wanted to be generous to the person, they would garrote them first. In other words, they would kill them first by strangulation, okay, at the stake, okay, and then they would set the fire. They
right.
didn't want to burn them alive. All right?
Yeah.
But the
Gone.
Point is, to be honest with you, the burning is not what killed them anyway. It was the smoke, the inhalation
huh.
of the smoke.
Huh.
So they died actually from smoke inhalation,
wow.
which is a different form of strangulation. In other words, they died from the lungs
wow.
not being able to get the oxygen that they needed. So they were, most of them, were dead by the time the flames actually reached them, whether they garroted them in advance or not, okay? It's called technically asphyxiation.
Uh-huh.
That's what killed them, okay?
Wow.
Strangulation does the same thing. So either they were strangled before they set the fire or they died of asphyxiation because of the smoke from the fire.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, any comments on these matters?
Well, yes. What happens is the tormentor of the guy during the Inquisition set the standard that if you were tortured and you screamed, that was the devil in you that was screaming. So
like
therefore, you
like
are
to,
guilty.
I want to share. So Dennis is saying that with the screaming that was emitted by the person suffering while burning at the stake, it was interpreted by the torturers or the executioner as the devil coming out. And so the pain being felt was actually an acknowledgement that the person had been possessed by a satanic spirit, and therefore they were getting burned to relieve them of that spirit, which is pretty gosh darn insidious, if you ask me.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yaffe Batya, we're about 8 minutes to go. And before we sign off, how can individuals around the world connect with you? And, of course, Ezra Lanusim, Israeli Amuta, your organization based in the Holy Land, and also with branches all around the world.
Right, exactly, because we have managing directors in a lot of different countries. I don't do this all by myself. I have a whole team of people. I have now, I think, 40 managing directors on my staff, okay, who are all around the world. So they can write to me on email, which is also on your site, Don. Thank you very much. It's Yaffe Batya, YAFFBATYA, at yahoo.com. I'm also on Facebook. We also have a site on Instagram. We've got a much larger following on Instagram now. We're going to be putting out a lot of information on that Instagram site, so they can look for Ezra Lanusim on Instagram, and I'll give you that Instagram information, Don, so that you can also add that to the information you have about me.
Okay.
The thing for people to understand is this education about the Inquisition and the forced conversions and the movement of people who are trying to make it back today to what our ancestors were like as Spanish and Portuguese Jews, Sephardi Jews, they can help us. They can get the word out. They can send that link to the trailer for the documentary out to other people who might have an interest in it. There's a lot of ways people can help. It doesn't cost money. It might cost a few minutes of their time. But we need an awful lot of help and support in order to get this educational material out to the world, and in particular to use, you know, a small portion of the fee to watch the film for fundraising so we can do more and more to help our communities of B'nai Hussein that are also around the world.
Beautiful. Dennis, any concluding words before we sign off?
God bless everybody.
Okay, Dennis concluded with God bless everybody. I'd like to thank Yaffa Batikaste again, the CEO of Ezra Lanusim, Israel Yamuta, talking about today this Soul Awakening documentary, which I've only seen 3 minutes of it. I can't wait to see the whole 2 hours of it, Children of the Inquisition and their upcoming new book, and as well for Dennis Ryan, who unfortunately had some technical glitches getting him in. I'll try to work on it so the next month the three of us or more of us can get on and much clearer audio. In the meantime, blessed souls, this is Donzo Sigluman, your local international cyberspace Torah actress, Torah Ashkan, reminding everyone we've all got to be good, because Ateba Tov Lahetiv, it is a divine attribute that is the nature of the good to do good, and the Creator is the source of all our goodness, manifests in a way of awakening consciousness and not buying into dystopian viewpoints at whatever insidious form that it may reveal itself, which it seems to be revealing itself more than just the eight, you know, appendages of, say, like an octopus. But here we're going to sign off today with Ari Lester's Shepherds of Men, which is a stern warning to the leaders of this world that they are sharing some sheep that of a flock they do not keep, and what are the implications of abusing human beings. Everyone, let's have a wonderful day in a way of Ahava Chad, one love, Goral Chad, one destiny, Kolam of Olas, Badarchin, Mdarchin, Shalom. This is Shepherds of Men by Ari Lester, who will always give us more. Take care, everyone.
But is it not the flock that a shepherd is meant to watch? You eat until you're full. You wear the finest wool. You slaughter healthy sheep from a flock you do not keep. You will not help the poor, the sick you do not cure. Broke, you never bought, and the lost you never bought. You rule the flock by force, you're working like a horse, so they must run and hide with no shepherds at night. My sheep wander and graze, they're worried, low and high, on every hill they cry. My flock of sheep will cross, the face of earth is lost, and no one tries to crawl or search for them at all. Whoa, shepherds of men, only yourselves you can. But is it not the flock that a shepherd is meant to watch? You eat and fill your food. You wear the finest wool. You are a healthy sheep from a flock you do not see. Back from your head, you're done, you shout no more, and yourself as before, cause I'm rescuing my sheep from in between your teeth. No more will they be me for you to kill and eat. Behold, I'm here to find my flock and take what's mine. I'll keep my sheep for good, just as a shepherd should. I'll rescue everyone from where they may have run. Let me rainy, bad, dark, and cloudy day. Whoa, shepherds to make, only yourselves you can. But if you have to fly, that a shepherd is meant to watch. I'm a